Hello, you're listening now to Talking Shiitake with your hosts on this podcast, Christian Turner and Katie Nelson. They will delve deep into your mind and your psyche, understanding things about yourself that you know not. And for now, you will join them on an adventure. You can also find them on the interwebs, on the Facebook, on the Twitter, on the Talking Shiitake.
Talking Shiitake, this is Christian.
This is Katie.
Hey, we're back for another one of our podcasts, and we wanted to thank everybody for their comments on Facebook. Keep them coming. Whether you agree, disagree, tell us.
Seems like people are disagreeing with us sometimes.
That's good, though. We don't want people towing.
It is good. It's healthy.
Yes. We can't have them towing the party line. you know, we might be right, more than likely. But,
and they'll come to that conclusion eventually, obviously.
If the brainwashing works.
Only. Listen closely.
The fluoride in the water will get them eventually.
It definitely will.
So.
Listen to a previous podcast. Now, how would they listen to a previous podcast, Christian?
They would listen to a previous podcast by going to our Facebook page and clicking on one of our previous podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
And they can basically listen to all of them that way.
That's true.
And they can download them to their mobile device, whatever that may be.
Listen to them over and over again if you want.
Share them with friends. Sometimes, like, well, I wanted to go share one with my dad because I know my dad doesn't like my kooky beliefs sometimes. But he I think he likes me, so he kind of has to put up with it.
Or does he?
He might not like me, but, you know, he's got that parental love thing going on, so.
Out of obligation.
Yeah, I mean, as long as his friends doesn't know about it, he might be okay with it.
I see, okay.
You know how the parents are. Just don't embarrass me. So, Katie.
Mm-hmm?
Let's talk about the conspiracy of the week.
Conspiracy of the week. It's not global warming, is it?
There, we did have somebody talking about global warming on our Facebook page, Mr. Oak.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't believe in it. I think he completely disagrees with it, but, you know, I'm in Alaska, and it's kind of warm right now.
Is it?
Yes, it's, I know while the rest of the country maybe has been in the cold, it's been a warm winter, so.
Well, I think we're coming out of a climate change, really.
Did we cause this climate change?
That's the question right there. It's not as if the climate's changing. It's obviously changing. That's not the debate. The debate is what's causing it. And, I mean, we are coming out of an ice age. It's going to get warmer.
That could be true. But do you think maybe the global warming moniker is maybe the wrong thing? Maybe it's just, maybe we need to take care of the environment. If we wrap it up in global warming, everybody can, well, global warming exists or global warming doesn't exist. And then they forget that maybe we shouldn't throw all the stuff away that we throw away or release all kinds of crazy stuff into the environment. I think maybe we get led astray with just the kookiness of the argument.
Well, I think it becomes politicized, too, where there's all these fundraising and there's millions of dollars going towards global warming. And then it becomes a money-making opportunity, and it's not really out for, you know, the betterment of humanity once again or helping the environment. It's about a money-making opportunity for the government.
And other businesses. There's plenty of people that are not at all tied to the government that are making a lot of money either promoting global warming or fighting against it.
But that wasn't even our conspiracy theory.
I know. Crazy, huh? So, just
Let us know what you think about global warming. Weigh in on that. That'd be good.
We would love to hear about it.
Right.
But we're going to go a little bit toward the entertainment industry
Okay.
I've just heard about a movie that's coming out soon. You can catch the official trailer on YouTube. It's called Soaked in Bleach.
Okay.
And it's about this theory that Courtney Love killed Kurt Cobain. And if you don't know Kurt Cobain, most people know it. He was the lead singer of Nirvana.
Mm-hmm.
Great grunge band from the 90s. Shot himself or committed suicide. Is the official story.
That's the official story.
But a lot of people believe that Courtney Love is an evil woman and mm-hmm. was an evil wife. And there's a new documentary coming out about her. And it is basically talks about how a lot of the evidence points to her as killing him.
Interesting. What do you think she thinks about this movie coming out?
I haven't heard of her suing. So maybe there's just a point where maybe they made the movie in a way to where she can't sue. You know, there's all kinds of legal technicalities where they can
maybe just any publicity is good publicity.
And I'm pretty sure she has been recorded or interviewed saying that.
Really?
I believe there is I can't remember exactly what it was, whether it was a recording or whether she said it to a reporter about her saying, hey, it's, you know, there's no such thing as bad publicity, which is mm-hmm. a long time Hollywood saying.
Right.
Which would go along with the music industry, even if they are from cloudy Seattle.
Right.
Yeah. So I know.
So what do you think? Do you have any information on that? Do you think that she may be involved? Is there anything to substantiate that?
Well, I think it's really easy for people to blame the wife or the mistress or the lover that becomes successful after the downfall of her partner, whatever mm-hmm. in whatever aspect that may be. Yeah, I mm-hmm. think it's pretty simple and pretty easy for especially men in our society to do that, to put down the woman because she became famous. And we've seen plenty of examples in life where a woman has killed her husband to get money or to become famous. I'm not sure this is the case, but Courtney Love is a different type of woman, very ambitious. And last I heard, her daughter was not even talking to her. And her daughter basically, I think at 16, went to live with the grandparents and not with their mom. Now, her mom has a long history of drug abuse. So there could be a bunch of other issues that are involved here, but there's enough there.
Well, drugs were definitely involved, I think.
Right.
I mean, Kurt and her, and I mean, they were heavily involved and had some serious addictions. And I mean, he had a depression issue. That's the problem, is that it's fairly consistent with his behavior. If it was totally out of the norm and he was this happy-go-lucky kind of guy, then, you know, you might want to think twice about it. But here's somebody who locked themselves away, from what I understand, and did mass amounts of drugs and was on a very self-destructive mission anyway. I mean, it kind of leads to the behavior of suicide. It's consistent with how he lived his life.
I agree with you. I think it's hard to just pin it on her. But again, there are some people that will feed their troubled partners the drugs mm-hmm. to keep them under control.
Enabling.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. For sure. That's true.
And one of the rumors going around at that time was that Kurt was going to leave Courtney, which would have taken...
He's going to clean up his act. That could do it.
Yeah. And within she released her first album with her... Not her first album, but her big album, one that made her famous as a musician with her band Hole.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it was a week after he died.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot there to make you wonder.
Interesting. Now, what was the note? Wasn't there a note found in his wallet just recently?
There was a note that, to me, it almost sounded like he was just writing some crazy stuff, whether it was part of a song. I mean, if you look at some of the things he used to write or talk about, he used to get a little kooky and, you know, fly off the handle. But it was kind of called her a couple names, but it wasn't really that pointed, and we can post that along with the link up to the to the movie trailer on our Facebook page. But it's to me, it was he could have been calling her some names and saying she was kind of not the nicest person in the world, but it was just maybe one of his going to be in a song or something. Who knows what it is? It was a note in his wallet that it was found when he died.
But it had her name on it. I'm not sure what the note said. That's what I'm asking.
I don't remember the specifics behind all of the wording, but it was definitely, it was focused on her, and it talked about his wife. So
that's a little strange.
Yeah.
Somebody would write that note and put it in their wallet. But like you said, I mean, he was a writer, he was a songwriter, so definitely could have been part of that. We don't know. Yeah. We don't know.
Artists can be crazy. Isn't your...
Artists be loco.
Yes, yes. Isn't your favorite painter super crazy? Or wasn't he?
Who? Salvador Dali?
Yeah.
He was a little different.
Different, crazy. There's not much of a difference there.
I mean, that's the thing, though. You know, you get, and that's the problem, though, that a lot of times you find that they talk about that fine line between genius and insanity. You know, at what point are you crossing over?
Right.
I mean, a lot of people consider Cobain a genius, but with that comes, I guess, a price.
Yeah, it's they make a lot of money, and we always make it to be like they have this easy life, whether it's an entertainer or a sports star.
Mm-hmm.
They have their own issues just like the rest of us, so... It's really easy to point fingers and say, oh, they got all the benefits of life. They shouldn't be killing themselves or getting hooked on
drugs. What do they have to worry about, kind of thing?
Right.
Well, that kind of leads into what we were going to talk about today, too, with the whole victim mentality.
Talk to me about the victim mentality. What do you think about that?
I just find it somewhat of a low vibration of existence. Meaning that if you're living your life as if everybody's out to get you, and it sort of creates a fearful mentality as you go through life.
I agree. You know what I'm saying? I do agree with you there. I think if you focus on the negatives, the world's out to get you, you have really bad luck, nothing works out, you're exactly right.
So in my opinion, I don't know that we're victims. I really do think that we are the creators of our existence, of our reality, that we create it.
Well, I think, I think we, sometimes it's easy for us to play victims, but unless Genghis Khan or Alexander's at the gates and attacking you and raping and pillaging your village, then you're not a victim.
Well, and that's it, too. There's things that are going to happen. You know, you get hit by a car, or you get hit by something, or something horrible, tragic happens in your life. There are things that are going to happen that are going to try you throughout your life. But are we victims in this, or is this something that we created? Because if you think about it, and this is the way I like to think about, if you take a theory and you want to know if it's true, one of the things you can do is you can compare it to what's consistent in nature, right? So you say two people, humans having a kid, they're not going to have a giraffe, right? Humans are going to have a human baby. Giraffes are going to have a giraffe baby. That's consistent in nature. So if we look at if we have a creator and the creator created us, what is that creator going to create? If you look at what it says in the Bible, in his own image, we were created in his own image. So what would a creator create? Other creators, right?
That's,
I mean, wouldn't that make sense?
And humans tend to... Even at our lowest levels or our lowest vibrations, we tend to create.
We're creating all the time, is what I'm saying. But what are you creating? So what we need to do is understand that we are, right now, we're unconsciously creating. We're creating through our mind. Oh, we think our thoughts are just ours. Nothing's coming of it. We don't create the world. There's this God and there's this devil, and they're tormenting us, and we're just victims and pawns in the whole game. That we don't have any true power to create ourselves. That's kind of the mentality that we've kind of been brought up with.
Right. So.
You agree?
I do agree. That's how we've been brought up.
So what I think is that once we break through that victim mentality and realize that we are actually creating it, then you can't go back to the victim mentality. You realize that we are actually co-creating with the creator.
Or.
As creators ourselves.
Or maybe there's no creator and we're just creating, and we've created the creator. I don't know if that makes any sense, but...
It does, though. And I think to some degree we have actually done that.
Okay, so if we're creating, then there should be no way we should ever play the victim.
Exactly.
So how do you get past that?
Well, it's how you live your life. So basically, there's a book by the name of Power Versus Force written by Dr. David Hawkins. And Dr. Hawkins actually categorizes how human behavior and how people live their lives. And he's actually put it on a numerical scale, starting from 1 and going up to 1,000. So on the very low vibrational scale, you find that sort of shame, that victim mentality. Then it moves up to fear, and then it moves up to pride, courage. Courage is pretty up there. And then you break the 200 barrier, and then up there you have you start finding joy, peacefulness. So it is a whole scale. Like, where do you live on that scale? And obviously it oscillates, because you're going to find yourself in a sorrowful situation if you lose someone, and then you may dip down. But where do you live most of the time? That's what you're creating. If you're living in a fear-based mentality most of the time, guess what you're creating?
Yeah, I can see that. But what if we start off as children, and as children we're not really in control of our environment? So what if we're in a place where we are a victim as children? How do you get past that victimization? How do you transcend that?
Each person's going to have to do it on their own. It's definitely a journey and a path that everybody has to go through. Everybody's been victimized in one way or another that we think we have. But when you look back at it and you say, so you talk to somebody who has been victimized as a child, especially people who have gone through it and like written books about it, how to get through it. They look back and then you ask them the question, would you have done anything differently? Would you have changed anything in your childhood? Most of the time they would say no. Everything that happened to me as a child made me who I am today. It made me stronger. It made me a better person. I wouldn't change it. So when you look at that, then you think, okay, maybe I did actually create that. And I know that's really hard for a lot of people to take in. Why would somebody create being abused as a child? Because of the outcome of what you became because of it.
Wouldn't you think maybe we're looking at it the wrong way if we're talking about why did we create that? This is just what happened in our lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of worrying about, okay, maybe I created that, or arguing that we chose that path before we even came to this existence.
Right.
How are you going to deal with it now?
How are you going to deal with it now? And that's really the question.
Yeah.
What are we going to do now? What are you creating right now? And the thing about our ability to create is because we live in this three-dimensional universe and there's sort of a time delay because we view time as linear here. So because of that, there's a delay in the manifestation of what we create. So when you say, what am I creating? You're creating the future. So you have to understand that what you're doing and what you're saying and what you're feeling and behaving now, that is what's going to manifest in the future. It's not going to instantly manifest, thank God, because if every single thought that we had manifested, this would be even a crazier world than it is now. But it's that power of the true intention. What are you truly feeling? That's what's going to be created. The system is built perfectly, so you cannot fool it. You can say, I've always said I wanted a happy life. You may have said that, but with your true intention and what you really feel deep down, that's really what's going to manifest. Right. It doesn't matter what you say. It's what's deep down within you. You create with your heart and with your soul, not your mind.
I think intention is the perfect way to look at it, because we all want happiness and ease and riches.
Do we?
I think so. I think on the basic level.
I disagree with that.
The narcissistic part of us, maybe. The vain part of us. There's a part of our mentality, our system that wants that. But there's also a part of us that knows that the only way to success and to happiness and prosperity is through a little bit of resistance. Life becomes really boring if you're handed everything in life, if everything comes to you easily. So I would think that there's maybe dueling forces in our existence that are telling us, yeah, I want to just sit on the couch and watch TV and be rich and do whatever I want to do. But then there's another part of us that is trying to make us grow and become better and stronger, that will help us find a little bit of resistance in our life and trouble, and just a way of, so we can grow, basically.
No, and I agree. But the part that I'm saying that I disagree with is the fact that I don't know that everybody truly wants to be happy. People may say that they want to be happy, but yet they continually sabotage their lives. And they put themselves in horrible relationships because deep down inside, they're still living in that fearful victim mentality. And that's where I think I'm getting at. In order to transcend, you have to break through that, because you're going to live in it. You're going to wallow in it. Within that vibration of victimhood, you have alcoholism, you have addiction, you have all these things that are going to continually keep you down unless you can break through it. Then we sit there and we say, oh, I want to be happy, but I can't because of this. I can't because my husband does this, or I can't because my parents won't let me do this. So you continually blame it on other people, and you never truly empower yourself to grow.
Well, I think that's when you have to go stand in front of that mirror and look deep in your eyes and see what's going on there. I think we do want to be happy, but deep within our souls, for whatever reason, whether you want to make it religious, just the way we are, our DNA, whatever, I think we know that that path to happiness is not just saying, I want to be happy. That path to happiness is transcending the troubles in our life. And all mm-hmm. of us have troubles, whether we're Paris Hilton that is just handed, you know, millions of dollars just by being born a Hilton, or the guy in Zimbabwe that struggles to have food to eat every day. It's we have to find our path, and I think you're right, is where we have a problem is when we become victims, we lose that path. We lose where we're going. And I think a lot of media teaches us to be victims.
And oh my gosh, I so agree with that. They're continually telling us that we're never good enough, that we're not thin enough, that we're not pretty enough, that we're not rich enough, that we don't have the right things, that our house must, you know, reek, because there's always things about how you need to smell better and how you need to constantly improve. We're never enough. Right. And this is where I'm saying that we're continually beating ourselves up. Well, we're always putting ourselves down because of it started as a child. You had kids picking on you, telling you you're one thing or the other. And then we continually live within that mentality, saying that I'm never enough, I'm never enough. Then I don't deserve to be happy. And that's the mentality where you say, you can say you want to be happy, but you're never going to create it because you never truly deep down believe that you deserve to be happy.
Well, sometimes I think now there's a lot of us, and media tells us we deserve to be happy, but somebody is out there that's going to try to take your happiness away.
Oh, and then there's the fear right
so,
there.
So you better protect that happiness with guns and the Pledge of Allegiance and the freedom to make tons of money without having to look at the homeless person down the street. And I'm not against people making money and having a successful life, but we're maybe this constant barrage of someone telling us that someone's out to get what we've earned or what we've made or what we've been lucky enough to be given in life mm-hmm. is making us fearful. And when you're fearful, you're a victim.
That's true.
So,
well, there's a good test in Dr. Hawkins' book too, to see where you're kind of at and where you live. And it's basically he tells you to picture yourself walking up to a bum on the street. He's drunk, he's laying there, he's kind of passed out, kind of half awake, and you approach this person. What is the thing that you feel? Are you afraid of him, that he's going to take what you have? Are you disgusted by him because he's less than you? Are you angry with him because he's representing the human race in this way? Are you feel sorry for him and want to give him money? You know, I mean, there's different ways you can approach that same human being. So how you approach that is a good indication of kind of where you're at on that scale.
That's interesting, because I see a lot of emotion come out when I do see somebody, you know, mm-hmm. throughout my life, when I've seen somebody begging for money at a gas station, at wherever I may be, and whoever I'm with, you'll see a broad range of reactions from whoever you're with. I don't think I'm right. A lot of times I will hand somebody a dollar or two if I have it or whatever I have.
I do too.
And then I'm done with it. And someone will tell me, well, they're just going to go drink it. I'm like, okay. I gave what I could give.
Mm-hmm. And what they do with it is on them.
Right. I can't do anything about it.
I agree with you.
And that doesn't make me a great person. That's just what I have to do for myself. And maybe that's where maybe we can't always do things in this world based on what everybody else is going to think. We have to do what is right for ourselves. And some people, unfortunately, would basically look down upon that person and treat them really badly. But they have to deal with that on their own.
Right. Well, he basically says when you get to the point where you can look at that person and see yourself, then you've kind of broken through and you've gone to the upper end of the scale. When you can look at that person and say, wow, I chose to do that, realizing that that's just another manifestation of who you are, then you can truly see
it's almost
what's going on.
That's if we maybe look at every moment in our day as a lesson, then you can maybe see, regardless of what's going on with that person that's begging or pleading or whatever, suffering. If it's a lesson, what are we supposed to learn from that?
That we respect that lesson is what I'm saying.
Right.
If you can look at them and say, wow, I respect their decision. I'm not going to look down on them. This is what they chose to do. This is their choice. They created this.
Right.
And say, you know, maybe this is what they needed to improve their soul. Maybe this is what they needed to transcend their life and their being and their manifestation. Maybe that's what they needed. And to look at them and say, wow, I can respect that. That's hardcore to be able to choose that existence.
But okay, so us humans tend to be a little selfish in the majority of our time here on this earth.
Mm-hmm.
So that might be hard to look at, just like
that. It's really hard to look at, to say that that's me.
Right. So maybe what the people, you and I, or anybody else needs to look at is, what can I learn from this? What can I get from this? How can this make me better and my life better?
Mm-hmm.
And then, so you're going to make your decisions based on that, whether it's a homeless person or a rich person, you know, the cop writing you a ticket
mm-hmm.
or letting you, you know, go even though you were speeding 20 miles over the speed limit.
Right.
You know, what are you going to take from that? And how are you going to move that into your life to kind of make the world a better place?
You get a radar detector, right?
Are they legal?
I don't think so.
Yeah. I mean, I'm in Alaska, so they like, in Alaska, you can't, I mean, they like it to where you can ride your motorcycle without helmets. So we like a little bit of freedom up here in Alaska, but it's radar detectors were probably legal here, but most of the year you can't speed anyway because it's icy and snowy and
right the conditions.
Right, but
most in California, everybody likes to be told what to do. Apparently,
that is what I hear from one side, and the other side will tell me that they have the power and the freedom to try new things and make it a better world. And I think that's where the battle is. I think we're too busy going back to the victimization, looking outside of ourselves as, you know, everybody else controls what's going on in this world.
But it's what we've been taught. Think about it. I mean, from the very beginning, we've been taught that we're going to have a savior that's going to come and save us, that we have to pray to a God to help us out with our lives, that we have to look outside of ourselves for people to help us. And with that mentality, you lost all your power within yourselves, realizing that you can totally create everything that's happening. Like when we talk about, you know, they talk about the secret and the law of attraction and that kind of thing. I mean, it's just a tiny little piece of it, but it's true that what you project, you will receive. And if that's the case, then we need to be pretty conscious of what we're projecting.
I think you're on the right path. I think if we project a lot of fear and anger then we're going to attract people that are fearful and angry.
It's just how the system works. And it's not about somebody up there with a little magic wand going, I see what you're projecting, and this is what I'm going to do to you. It's not about that. It's like you are exuding the energy. The energy is just being attracted to you like a magnet. It's a physical force. It's scientific. It's not even about religion at this point. It's about science.
Right. If you were basically animals with some reasoning skills, in a lot of, not everybody will believe that, because some people will believe that we have a higher power out there that we must worship to be able to move to that next level. But basically, biologically, we're animals without fur that have a prefrontal cortex, and we can reason a little bit. But I think that's where you start getting a lot of the trouble, is we're reasoning so much, we're putting so much faith in this higher power to come and save us that we refuse to save ourselves. And aren't there religious sayings or teachings that tell us that we have to do the work?
Gotta do the work.
Yeah, we have to be the ones going out there making the changes, and then we can be saved, or whatever you may want to call it. But
at that point, you don't need to be saved, right, is the issue.
Right.
But I'm not trying to say that there's a lack of reverence there. You know, you don't just go out, I'm creating everything. I mean, there should be a reverence there. I do believe that there are higher powers. I do believe that we are provided an environment that is absolutely amazing, and we should have mass gratitude for that and thankfulness, and we should walk through this earth with reverence, and we should treat this planet with reverence. You know, I'm not saying that there's no consequences for our actions. As a matter of fact, there's mass consequences for our actions. We need to be conscious of what we're doing.
Right. And don't you think if you have gratitude in whatever you're dealing with, if there's some, and maybe you're not thankful that you were abused as a child or that you lost your loved one or anything like that, but if you're thankful for the opportunity to have had your loved ones to be able to take the pain that maybe you had growing up or that you're dealing with now and to do something with it, if you have some gratitude, don't you automatically get away from victimization?
You cannot, there is no anger in a grateful heart. You cannot have, the two cannot coexist. And that's why gratitude and being grateful and the whole, I mean, there's tons and tons of books on it. But that living your life with gratitude automatically already transcends you. And that's why it's important. Even if you don't understand the system of how it works, the two cannot coexist. And that's why so many people are out there preaching it.
What exactly do you think they're preaching? Just the gratitude part, or?
Be thankful, you know, thankful of everything. Thankful for that banana in the morning. Thankful for that tea. Thankful for the person, and actually thankful for the person who abused you as a child so that you could grow from that. Thankful for everything. If you could be thankful for everything that you've ever been given, good, bad, or indifferent, then you cannot be angry about it.
Right.
And then you automatically transcend. It's a great technique to break through.
Yeah, and I don't think you have to be happy that your life maybe was difficult growing up or now.
You don't
now
have to be happy about it.
But you can take it to that next level. You can say, correct, okay, this is the lessons I learned from this resistance, from this pain. And this is how I can help, whether it's help myself, help me be a better parent, help me be a better person in this world. And then I think what you'll see is like attracts like. So if you have gratitude and you're if you're basically happy in the world, that knowing and trust that life is the way it's supposed to be, I think you start attracting a lot more positivity into your life, and you're able to build upon it. If you're constantly worried about losing what you currently have, losing your, and we all have a fear of losing,
sure,
our jobs, our loved ones, but if we live within that fear, then basically we're dealing with the dark side, if you want to go to the Star Wars reference.
It is May 4th.
It is May 4th. So May the 4th be with you. So, but yeah, I mean, and when you look at that, the basics behind that, George Lucas studied under Joseph Campbell, who And I would invite anybody to go look up a little bit about Joseph Campbell. He has some great PBS documentaries where he talks about myths and the power of myths throughout history. And you can see where you have grace, where you have gratitude. You basically are thankful for your existence.
You start just for living, just for being.
Right. And it may be horrible. And the majority of the people listen to our podcast, they've suffered in one way or another. But many of us haven't suffered as much as a lot of people in this world suffer. I mean, there's child soldiers. There's people that are mutilated, women that are mutilated, just to control them, to keep them from exerting their power as women. Even in our world, in our country, we will put down women because they wear makeup, or they're not the perfect body type, or they are the perfect body type. We find a lot of reasons to put people down.
That's true.
And in a way, it's done to make ourselves feel better, which is another form of becoming a victim. If we have to put somebody down in any kind of way to make ourselves feel better, then we are choosing to be a victim.
I totally agree with that.
Yeah, so
there is no reason to do it.
Right.
You can totally look at every single person and either learn from them, appreciate them, respect them for whatever. Every single person out there is a teacher. That bum on the street, that's a teacher. They can teach you anything. That street sign, everything you can learn from. Look around you, the tree teaches you so much. Just look at the tree and the leaves and how what is above is below. I mean, it's like the hermetic principle, as above is below. The roots are just as the tree is visible that's underneath and the unseen. I mean, you can look at every little thing on this planet and it's teaching you a lesson. It's teaching you a story. It's up to us to have the eyes to see it.
I think if we go through life with the eyes to see these lessons, then there's no way we would ever be a victim.
Exactly. So if you're living in a victim mentality, you're missing something. But you're missing out on a great existence, I think.
Right. But I also say we all slide into that victim mentalities.
Totally. And that's what I'm saying. Yeah. There's sorrow, there's fearfulness. It's an oscillating scale, but where do you live most of the time? Right. That's what you're going to create.
And how quickly can you pull yourself out of that spot? Because I'm sure daily I'm presented with the opportunity to be a victim. And
absolutely.
Sometimes I embrace it and I become a victim, and it's not much fun.
Sometimes it's comfortable, though.
It is comfortable.
Sometimes it's a comfortable place because we recognize it. We've been there so many times. I speak for myself. You've been there so many times that you want to say, this feels like home. You know, you want to stay there because it's easy. But then you realize this isn't it. This isn't how you're supposed to live. This isn't happiness. This isn't existing.
But based on what we're talking about and maybe Zen principles, that feeling is exactly how it's supposed to be at that time. But you don't hold on to it.
We need it. We totally need it. Right. You have to have it, but when you live there. You can't live there.
Well, if you grasp on to those feelings of victimization, the world is after you. The world's going to get you. Obama this or George Bush that or whatever we want to go with, the taxes or...
We can rationalize and justify anything.
Right. But once we start holding on to it is where we get ourselves in a dangerous spot. If we understand we feel these emotions and let it go, then we're okay. And that is a Zen principle. I know you went with a hermetic principle, as above, so below, or whatever. Mm-hmm. Now, a lot of people don't understand that to be hermetic. Isn't that maybe a biblical type teaching?
It definitely is represented in the Bible in a couple different areas, but its origins go with the Emerald Tablets by Hermes Trismegistus, who that was one of the... It's actually the first of the hermetic principles.
Pre-biblical or post-biblical?
Pre, very pre.
Now, what do you... So if our people that follow biblical principles, isn't that going to be troubling for them? Won't that...
To say that we've adopted different beliefs and that those beliefs made it into the Bible, I mean, I don't know. It's just there. It is. It's just kind of common. I mean, we're humans, right? So we took information that we found. How was the Bible compiled? I mean, if we want to get into it, you know, where did these works come from? If you want to say, you know, Solomon and King David put these, what was already ancient works together to create what we now know as the Judeo-Christian Bible. I mean, those are the, that's the crux, that's the foundation. But where did that information come from? A lot of it came from the Egyptian beliefs. A lot of it came from the Persian, the Zoroastrian followers. I mean, if you want to look at it, it's all there. You can find the same scriptures in the New Testament as you can in the book of Daniel, which is the Old Testament, which is in the Zoroastrian scripts. So if you want to look at it as a whole and as an entity of itself, then you'll see that it all is kind of connected. It's all got to be connected because we're all connected. The information is connected. Not one is better than the other. It's just a different way of presenting it.
I just wanted you to kind of clarify the Hermetic part for the people that didn't understand, because I know some of our listeners maybe mm-hmm. haven't heard about it, or they haven't had an open mind about it.
Well, there's a lot of different, there's a lot of Hermetica out there. But if you want to look into it, the Emerald Tablets are a beautiful, beautiful document. They basically were written on an emerald tablet, supposedly at one time. Nobody knows whatever happened to those tablets. But everybody from Isaac Newton to Madame Blavatsky has retranslated the scripts. I mean, this is something that's considered to be one of the most sacred words on this planet. And if you look at it, it's absolutely beautiful. And that's actually where the secret law of attraction, that's where that comes from. It's actually part of the principles of the Hermetica. So it's just a tiny little piece of it. I mean, it's about rhythm. It's about the yin and the yang. It's about, you know, the feminine and the masculine. It's about balance. And it's about the creation of how we are the way we are today.
I know for a fact that you can take your Kindle app on your iPhone mm-hmm. if you don't have a Kindle, mm-hmm. and you can find the Hermetic writings. I think mm-hmm. it's either free.
The Emerald Tablets.
Yes.
I would look up that first, because there's a lot of things on the Hermetic writings and Hermes and Hermes Trismegistus, and you can look at a lot of that different stuff. But if you start with the Emerald Tablets and work your way from there, that's a really great way to start, because it's really the basics and the foundation of it.
And I think it's either free or it's like a dollar in the Kindle store.
I think it is free. No, I think it is free. You can find it online too. I think it's on YouTube. I think you can read it online. It's not hidden.
Right. And I would suggest, I know The Secret is very popular. Mm-hmm. I'm up in the air about whether I like it. So I wouldn't go with that as far as learning. I think.
And Rhonda Byrne did a good thing. You know, she brought a lot of information out there. I'm not saying that, but what some people tend to do is they tend to take the information, oh, I see. So if I give somebody something, I'm going to get something. So you're doing it out of what's your intention, just like you were saying earlier. It's truly about your intention. If you're truly giving of your heart, like when you give money to somebody and you don't care what they do with it because you're giving just to give, that intention is known. That attention is noted by your energy at the time of the giving.
Right.
So if your energy is giving something just to get something back, it also knows that too.
Right.
It's a perfect system.
Right.
So you got to be careful how you use the information.
Well, I think sometimes a good example is giving just to give and not worrying mm-hmm. about what you get back.
Exactly.
Your reward may never be anything tangible or anything noticeable. It may not be a reward, other than knowing within your mind and in your soul that you did something out of the goodness of your heart. And you didn't do this because of karma or rewards or fear of not doing it.
There you go. That's a good one right there.
Yeah. You just did it because you may not even know why you did it. It just felt right. You just did it. You didn't think mm-hmm. about it. You know, your friends may be looking at you like some crazy hippie liberal giving money to a poor person because they were raised on Reaganomics, and take what you can because you deserve to be rich. And I'm sure we all deserve to be rich at some level.
I think we all are rich at some level.
But if it's not monetary, who cares?
It doesn't count.
You know, and I would never, ever knock somebody for being rich or for working hard and having all the rewards of working hard.
It's everybody's right to have all of it. Nobody should be condemned for it.
Right.
Take whatever you need to make what you need. Who am I to judge it? It's not for me to judge.
And I think the working part is it should be a big part of it. If you truly are going to be rewarded in this world, no matter what you want or what you believe, there has to be work involved. And you deep down, you know, if you win the lottery, there's no work involved. That doesn't mean you should give back your money or you should give it all to charity. But you understand you didn't work to win that lottery. Mm-hmm. What you do,
there is a different appreciation we have to work for.
Right. And what you do after that, maybe that was a lucky bounce, to use a sports term. You win the lottery. What are you going to do with it now? That, like I said, you don't have to give it all to charity. But do you make yourself a better person? Do you provide for the future of your family? I think that's where you start. And that's why you see a lot of lottery people become broke afterwards, because they go at it like they deserve that to be given to them. Mm-hmm. And that is, to me, a form of victimization. If you understand, hey, I got a lucky break, I still got to work hard in this world to make my life decent. Whether you go out and work every day of your life 9 to 5, that's different. You don't have to at that point, maybe. But you still have to work on yourself. You have to work to make yourself a better person and a good part of this world on whatever level.
And if you can understand that winning the lotto may actually be more of a curse than a blessing. That those decisions that you were just talking about, the decisions that you have to make with that money, what do I do with this money? Should I give it here? Should I do this? Is it rightfully mine? What do I do?
Right.
Just having to live within that decision-making process is not necessarily easy. So you can look at that in a couple different ways.
Right. The 1% may say, oh, I'd love to be rich like that. Mm-hmm. But the 99%, I'm reversing it. The 99% would love to be rich like that. And the 1% that is rich will tell you that there's a whole level of different problems coming along with that.
Exactly.
And sometimes those problems involved your loved ones showing themselves in a way that you don't really want to see.
Right?
Right.
You start seeing people for who they really are.
Yeah. You start seeing victims.
Yeah.
And what would you say to everybody to avoid becoming victims? Is there something we can do as individuals, in your opinion, that might help us get past that?
That's a good one. You know, I mean, I really do like the grateful part of it, being grateful for what you have, living your life with gratitude, but just looking at things as a lesson, you know, looking back at it and be thankful for the horrible things that happened to you, as crazy as that sounds. Be thankful for everything that you've seen and you've done, because this truly is an amazing gift to have this experience. And every minute that we live on this planet, just know that that's, in and of itself, is true miracle.
Right.
And if you live your life like that, I mean, what's the Einstein saying? You know, live your life as if nothing is a miracle, or live your life as if everything is. I don't know. I messed up that saying. But basically, live your life as if every single thing is a miracle, because it truly is.
And it's maybe it goes along with the, it's better to have loved and lost than to have never loved at all. I
mean, that's like a really bad cliche, Christian. Now you just, no, I'm just kidding.
But I mean, really, we want to be fearful that we're going to lose those things that are most important to us.
Mm-hmm.
And we all know that we have lost things that are very important to us, or people that are very important to us.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard not to become a victim when that happens. It's hard to be able to be grateful for that loss.
Yeah.
So
that's for sure.
And coming from a person at this point that has been lucky enough to not have to experience that kind of pain, but knowing that someday I will.
Just knowing, right?
Right. I know
that
there is
a certain comfort in knowing that you don't have to go through that again. If there's any like crazy sense in that,
right?
You know, like, I don't know.
But a lot of us live our lives sheltered, avoiding the opportunity to experience that pain. Mm-hmm. And I understand that, because it's pain is not enjoyable. But is it better to put ourselves into a place where we don't experience that pain, to protect ourselves to the point where we don't hurt that bad? Is that what we're supposed to do?
We'll never learn.
Right. And we will always be victims. It's really easy to put those walls up to protect ourselves, but then we become a victim of our own fear and our life and our soul will suffer from it.
It's true.
I don't know if that was an upper or downer conversation we just
had. Gosh, I don't know. But you know what I can do, though? I'm going to post the chart, Dr. Hawkins' chart, on Facebook, and you can check it out. And it has all the different phases and the levels that you can see and kind of look and say, hey, where do I find myself most of the time? Do I live in peace? Do I live with joy? Or am I living with anger and fear, courage, pride? Where do I find myself on this scale? And look at all the different traits and the characteristics and kind of, you know, lean towards one or the other, whatever feels comfortable for you, and you'll find out where you are pretty quickly.
Right. I think it's very easy to enjoy this world. I think, to me, it's always the only rules I ever have about what anybody believes or feels or does is just don't hurt people purposely. You're going to hurt people because of decisions we make sometimes, but I think if people just are honest with themselves and don't hurt people, believe what you want to believe.
Totally. Believe what you want to believe.
Yeah.
You know, I know I'm preaching all this stuff, but don't just listen to me. Look it up for yourself.
Katie,
do the work. I feel like I've done quite a bit of the work, so I'm not saying I know it all, but I've done some research.
Right, and I know, knowing you, Katie, you know you're not done.
I'm not even scratched the surface.
Right. So, so
otherwise the podcast would be over.
Exactly, and there'd be no, we wouldn't even have to sing Kumbaya anymore. We'd just look at each other and smile, and everybody'd be happy.
Oh, that's a perfect world, right?
To some
Let's
people.
Let's leave it on that vision right there.
But I was going to ask you what TV shows you've been watching.
Oh, my gosh. How about Da Vinci's Demons? Did I bring that one up earlier?
I don't remember if you have, but...
Da Vinci's Demons is great.
Good show.
I like it.
I love...
Da Vinci's just brilliant. Can I just say there was one episode recently where he discovers that the stars and everything did not revolve around the Earth. It was amazing. He had, like, this incredible revelation, and they show, like, all the artistic drawings of how he figures out that we are actually circling around the sun. It was really cool.
I will have to check that out, because you've been telling me about it for a while, and I love the composer. For anybody that
doesn't...
anybody that doesn't know, Bear McCreary composes the music on that. He composes the music, or he composed the music on my favorite show of all time, Battlestar Galactica. And probably the most popular show on TV right now, The Walking Dead.
So, oh, he does that one too.
He does.
I did not know that.
So he's a pretty popular guy. He stays pretty busy. And his music just is perfect for at least the shows I've seen of his.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I would give it a shot just because of that.
Is that the show you're promoting this week?
No, I'm not. Everybody promotes The Walking Dead, and it's good in its own way. I'm watching House of Cards on Netflix.
Oh, I've heard of that. Somebody told me to watch that.
I'm almost through the first season. It is an amazing show.
Really?
To show you basically what's going on in Washington.
Mm.
And
that's funny because I always say it's a House of Cards.
Yes.
That's funny.
It's brilliant. It's Kevin Spacey does a great job. The writing is amazing. And Kevin Spacey will talk to you during the show, which sometimes that's kind of creepy and feels weird, but it's nice to have that Washington insider that you don't know whether he's good or bad talking mm-hmm. to you and explaining to you why he does what he does, what's going on there, what's the big picture. It's really interesting, and I know we knock our politicians in Washington a lot because of corruption and some of the decisions they make. I like this because it shows you the crap they have to go to.
Yeah.
Or go through to make this.
And why the decisions are so crappy that they make.
Right. And we can sit back and say, oh, they shouldn't have done that. But it's not that simple when mm-hmm. we elect our people to do these jobs. So I say everybody give it a few episodes on that. And I think if you connect the two, Da Vinci's Demons and House of Cards, I think you might find a correlation there that might actually help us understand how not to be victims in a different stuff way.
I think you're right.
So
I'll check it out.
All right, Katie, any closing thoughts before we head out of here?
No, I think we pretty much wrapped it up on that. Yeah. I'll post the chart on Facebook. You guys can check it out. If you get a chance to read Dr. Hawkins' book, Power versus Force, it's outstanding. And he has the Audible book. It's written, read by him, and it's not the best narration, but it is really good. It's amazing information. Everybody should at least look at the chart at the very least.
So if you're okay, if you have to drive and you want to listen to it, listen to the Audible version, understanding mm-hmm. that he is not a normal narrator. So
it's almost like he was forced to do it.
So
that's what it sounds like. He was forced to read it.
And I think sometimes if you understand that going into listening to a recording like that, you're okay.
Yeah, exactly.
If you understand it's not going to be top-notch produced, but the information is still great, I think it's a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So I guess we're going to close up another episode of Talking Shiitake. Make sure you see us on Facebook and Twitter. Send us your comments. Yell at us if you'd like. I've been yelled at before. Katie's been yelled at before. We both play hockey, so we get yelled at.
Katie Christian's been yelled at by me before.
That's only because I got tripped and my kneecap fell off by Katie.
Oh my gosh, you're still bringing this up? Now there's a victim mentality.
It's just fun. everybody says you're so nice, Katie.
Because I am.
I've been maimed by you.
Says the victim.
This is true. I will work on my being a victim.
And what you need to do is thank me for teaching you that lesson.
I thank you for those, because I did have surgery and got to relax for a couple weeks. Got to read a couple books instead of stressing about hockey.
There you go.
But I will.
See? You're welcome.
But I will continue to work on it in between now and the next podcast to make sure that I'm less of a victim to your violent hockey ways.
There you go. Work on it.
All right. Everybody have a great week. We'll see you next time.
Thank you.